Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
And welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, Thomas Vogler did his recently acquired French national champions jersey proud today by taking a fantastic solo win to Bagnères de Luchon and adds yet again to the impressive tour that the French are having on home soil.
They must be taking drugs.
Well, that's the only conclusion
either
which
that
we can come.
Other people aren't taking drugs. Because remember Marc Madio was berating the French Federation because, you know, the unreasonably harsh French drugs policy was costing them wins. I think this is the Tour de Landes. I think everybody's shitting themselves.
Well, you know, stranger conspiracy theories have come true. And speaking of a conspiracy theory, I just thought of one as you were talking there. I actually think Bernard Eno has had a word with everyone in that kind of frightening way that only Bernard Eno can, and has said, let the winner win.
I'll punch you.
I'll be after you. I'll be taking your wife and children and locking them in a cupboard until you let the French win.
I actually passed three dead badgers on the road today coming back from work.
I think, have I just fallen asleep for 20 minutes and you've been rabbiting on, talking about stuff, and there's a logical link to what I've just been talking about and dead badgers on the road?
Well, no, what it is that people are just taking out their anger at Bernardino and random badgers around Europe.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I'm being slow.
Anyway, we're clearly a bit kind of stir-crazy and happy here because it's our 100th episode. But
people have been asking us, what are we going to do for the 100th episode? I can't possibly think what we could have done.
Well, I'm wearing a tutu.
You're wearing a tutu. Okay, yeah. I'll put on a small party hat. And we'll, I think that'll have to suffice, folks. I'm really, really sorry. There's nothing more grandiose and let's face it, thought out. But it's the 100th show. Wahey!
Yeah, whoop-de-doo.
shall we get back to some cycling?
Yeah, was there any on today?
It was a fairly dull stage. It's hardly worth our while recording. Shall we just go and have a drink?
No, I think people have been waiting. So, what happened?
Well, let's do the impressive, but obviously not the talking point of today stuff first. And Thomas Vogler and the breakaway that, I mean, I think it took nearly 100 kilometres before there was a break that managed to get away and stay away today, which is in stark contrast to how it's been in recent days.
Yeah, I mean, I had it on. I was doing stuff around the house because I was in the split shift. And I had it on in the background. And as you say, I think it was somewhere between 80 and 100 kilometres before a break stuck. And the race was infernally fast. At one point, Astana had forced a split in the peloton with Saxo Bank and Schleck behind. And this was before they got to any important climbs. But once the break got away, it was kind of like yesterday. You know, the thing where you expect the guys to get caught. One guy did a storming ride, a Frenchman, in the French national champions jersey, and you know, he's French, so chapeau.
And you're allowed to say it there.
Aye, with a Scottish accent, of course. It's the old alliance. Vogler rode a stormer. I mean, absolute stormer. Even when it was clear he had enough time to take it easy going down the hill, he was pushing really hard. Worthy winner, and you know, adds to a great tour for the French. I mean, it must be the best Tour de France for the French riders for, you know, a decade or so at least.
Well, it was on the break of the OR category, Port de Belize, that Thomas Vogler made his move. And as you say there, John, you know, he was really, really pushing downhill when he probably didn't have to. Although I suppose he was maybe a wee bit worried about the two chasers from that initial breakaway group that was Alessandro Balan and the Futon Servetta rider Arrieta. I mean, talking about his descending, he nearly lost it at one point, and there's a huge wobble on the road as he was going round one of the turns, which nearly put him into someone's barn.
No, it was cool as mince. I mean, it was almost a high side and kind of MotoGP style. yeah. But, I mean, he held it beautifully and deserved to win. I mean, a Frenchman winning in France, wearing the French Nationals Champions jersey. Once he retires, he's going to dine out on that till he dies.
I almost had a tear in my eye. I really did. It just looked perfect. Absolutely wonderful. I'll tell you something else. I am currently loving his red, white and blue custom paint job, Colnago C59.
Yeah, it's a Colnago with a nice paint job. I mean, who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thought it?
The other thing that was genuinely moving today was in the descent of the Porte d'Aspe. You know, we mentioned Casartelli dying yesterday. It was the 15th anniversary. And the number of riders who took the trouble just to, you know, to wave or cross themselves as they pass shows that they haven't forgotten. And neither should we. You know, he died doing or providing the entertainment that we love. I think it was Mark at Veluist Tours who mentioned he had a half inkling that, you know, Lance would ride up. Because, you know, Lance, there's the iconic picture that you've done a painting of where he raises...
Well, that's, I mean, you're saying about not forgetting. I mean, I remember that moment so much, and I still think that's one of the greatest moments in tour history.
No, absolutely.
Regardless of what you think of Lance Armstrong one way or t'other, I think it's one of the greatest moments in tour history was when 3 days after Casartelli died, Lance took the stage and pointed to the heavens as he crossed the line. I'm nearly welling up right now.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, Mark said, he said he thought there would be, I mean, he might not have been so poetic because he's English or whatever, but what he said in essence was there would be something really classy if when they got to the monument, Lance just parked up his bike against the monument and abandoned the tour, just as a kind of goodbye to the tour. And part of me was thinking, God, that would be classy as hell.
It really would, and you know what? I'd actually be petitioning Jeff Nowitzki to call off the case.
If he'd done that, I'd be going, Jeff, just leave him alone. That's
just
class.
Leave the man alone, absolutely.
But he didn't, you know, so it was just a kind of idle hope. So there's been, I noticed I was working this afternoon, you know, spotting dead badgers and all that kind of thing. And I noticed there was some kerfuffle on Twitter. Did something provocative or controversial happened during the stage?
Yeah, but before we get to that, behind that breakaway, I noticed that it was Saxo Bank were, I suppose, keen to avoid the mistake they made yesterday and absolutely dominated the front of the peloton today. And I just wanted to mention Jens Vogt, Stuart O'Grady, and indeed Chris Anker Sorensen, who I thought were phenomenal at the front, absolutely buried themselves and hammered up that climb today.
Yeah, and I mean, after us saying that Schleck looked exposed yesterday, which he did, Saxo, again, as everybody in the professional peloton, clearly listened to the Velocast and saw the error of their ways. and yeah, rode like a yellow jersey holder's domestique should ride. And then Schleck attacked.
Well, once, I think just before that, it's worth noting that when the Saxo Bank domestiques had finally been used up, it was Schleck himself who took to the front and caused a small group to go away that included Contador, Samuel Sanchez, Denis Menchov and Jürgen van der Broek. So we had this phenomenal situation with the top five GC guys separated from the rest of the field.
Yep.
And still being on the front, we had Andy Schleck, who was continually looking round in an almost, you know, Lance Armstrong style the look to see how Contador was doing. And it's here where the controversy starts, because shortly after that, I mean, I think that the camera was further on up the road seeing how Vogler was doing.
No, I was actually looking for O&P in a Velocast jersey, but I couldn't see him either.
And the camera, the director of the footage kind of jumped back as obviously someone was screaming in his ear, Schleck's attacked. And you just saw Andy Schleck going off up the hill, and in from the right-hand side of the picture comes an Astana jersey. And then at the sudden dawning realisation, that's not Contador, that's Vinokourov.
Indeed.
You know, Contador must be in trouble. And at the moment at which Vinokourov managed to hook onto Schleck's back wheel, it just looked like he'd stopped pedalling. And I was screaming at the TV, what are you doing, man? Keep going, keep going. But of course, It wasn't the fact he'd blown. He had a mechanical.
Well, it was chain suck. I mean, people are talking about the chain falling off and stuff, but the back wheel locking and, you know, lifting off the ground. Essentially, his chain got jammed either between the two chain rings or between, you know, the small chain ring and the chain stay on the drive side of the bike, which locked up in the same way that riding a fixie and, you know, you suddenly stop pedalling and your arse flies into the air because your rear wheel's heading skyward. And then it dumped the chain. Now, a 25-gram chain watcher would have saved Schleck the yellow jersey today. And to say it saves weight or, you know, adds weight is a piece of nonsense because these guys are having to add weight to the bikes to get them to, you know, to conform to UCI rules anyway.
Absolutely.
So just leave 25 grams of ballast elsewhere. I mean, that should be a lesson to people. But then, and I mean, the reason we're recording a wee bit late tonight is I wanted to sit down and actually watch this. Bert comes screaming past Schleck. Now, I'm inclined to be charitable and say that Bert maybe didn't realise what was going on with Schleck initially when he launched the attack. He maybe thought Andy had suddenly, you know, his leg had dropped off or something. But, you know, there's a long history, and I've seen conflicting things both for and against Contador and on Twitter, and in fact on our forum as well. You know, there's a discussion with both sides being, you know, represented. But from Merckx refusing to wear the yellow jersey after Acuña crashed, from, you know, even the shifty Armstrong waiting for Ulrich when he went into a ditch, Ulrich soft pedalling when Armstrong had the argument with the Musette, you know, there's a long history of people not taking advantage of a mechanical when, you know, for a GC guy, and Contador disregarded that today. Now, people can disagree with me, but that flaunts the history of the sport, which is a vital element of the sport. It speaks to me of a man, I'm not going to say with no class, but a man who's scared enough of Schleck that he's prepared to disregard that precedent and that history. And the fact he couldn't follow and it was Vino who had to initially says to me, actually, I was wrong and you were right. He doesn't have the form that we expected him to have in the third week, and he's running scared.
Well, potentially, and I suppose we'll find out in the days to come. I mean, I've just got a few quotes here from both Andy Schleck and Alberto Contador. First of all, simply because we're talking about Contador, he says, "I set out with the intention to attack on the climb, but when I countered Andy, I didn't know he actually had a problem. When I knew he had the problem, it was already too late. We'd taken a significant lead on him." My opinion? Utter horseshit.
Yeah, what are those things in your ear, mate?
For one, and the fact that Schleck had gone and Contador was nowhere to be seen means that he had to have ridden past him. Now, it beggars belief to suggest that Alberto Contador didn't look at Andy Schleck as he went past him on that climb and couldn't see that his legs were spinning and nothing was happening.
Yeah, and let's not forget, he wasn't sitting on Schleck's wheel. Schleck had dropped him. So Bert had time at 12, 14 miles an hour or whatever, maybe even 18, let's give him some credit, to come up behind him and see what was going on. So and that doesn't hold water. It doesn't hold water.
Yeah, and further to that, John, the camera obviously stayed, well, it was flicking back and forth, of course, between Contador and Schleck himself. And I noticed Alberto Contador kept looking back all the time to see what was going on. So if he didn't realise, if maybe, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt, which I just can't, to say he must have thought, you know, Schleck's blown, which actually doesn't make any sense because the man was flying up the road and he'd only, you know, put in an attack of a few seconds before he had the mechanical. Even if he thought that at the time, looking back, he would have seen Andy Schleck off his bike, trying to put the chain back on. He must have known there was a mechanical. And I don't want to single out, we talked about this before we started recording, I don't want to be singling out Alberto Contador here, because that group contained, as we said, the first five GC riders. So you had Contador go past, you had Menchov go past, you had Sanchez go past, and you had Jürgen van der Broek going past. And by the time they got over the summit of the climb, Sanchez descended like he had wings.
Yeah.
So they knew what was going on.
Aye. I mean, people can say it's racing and there's racing incidents. And, you know, there's a couple of really interesting things in the forum about this. the rather unflatteringly moniker T-Hag, who's one of our Canadians, or Canadian,
one of our Canadians. Have we invaded and no one's told me?
One of our Canadian listeners says that, you know, mechanics are part of the issue. And, you know, to take away the bike essentially makes the sport ridiculous because the bike is an inherent part. And that's true, but I would go back to the fact that we're a sport who values our heritage and our history. And that heritage and history dictates that you don't attack a GC guy when he has a mechanical, unless it's in a time trial or something, you know. And we've seen loads of places where time trials have been, I'm thinking Rasmussen and his comedy bike handling, for example, where, you know, you've got no choice in a time trial. And if Contador had gone on and, say, Menchov or Sanchez had been the ones pushing the lead, I wouldn't have had any argument with Contador holding their wheel because he has to react to what they do. But for Contador to be the one pushing the pace left me with a sour taste in my mouth. Now, I'm happily going to condemn the others or tar them with the same brush. But Tom on the forum actually makes a really good point that if you're Denis Menchov, and remember he was down the hill at Stockau with, you know, with Carlos Sastre, and mm-hmm. you're the victim of losing that minute and a half because of that frankly ludicrous Saxo Bank neutralisation of stage two.
Yep.
There's no way in hell you're going to wait for Andy Schleck because you've mm-hmm. been stuffed in the past. Mm-hmm. And as he says, what goes around comes around. But yeah. that's a sentiment and that's a phrase that's going to come back to haunt Alberto Contador. Because unless our sport has lost all sense of history, people won't forget today.
No, I don't think they will. I mean, I'm just thinking this through here in respect of what Alberto Contador has said in the kind of post-race interview. And the point that's actually getting me is he's claiming he didn't see it. I'd actually have more respect for him if he said, look, it's a race. What do you want me to do? Stop him, offer to give him a bloody lift. But he didn't say that. It's the claiming he didn't see it that's actually really getting to me here.
It's because he knows he's done wrong. I mean, yeah. From his own mouth, he knows he's done wrong. He's openly saying, well, I understand why Andy's angry. Of course he does, because if Schleck had done that to him, he'd be bloody fuming.
Yeah.
He knows he's done wrong, and, you know, he's got an earpiece in his ear, he's got a pair of eyes, which, as you say, he was turning back, and you could clearly see from the Moto film that he knew what was going on, and he still chose to push the pace, and that's an insult to the heritage of the sport, and Contador has gone down in my estimation today because of that.
Okay, well, let's look ahead now to the position where Andy Schleck has lost the yellow jersey, but he's only behind by 8 seconds. And we've got the first time over the Tourmalet tomorrow, but I think everyone's really looking to Thursday after the rest day when we have a mountaintop finish again, because it's a long, long way to pull after we go over the Tourmalet tomorrow.
Yep.
In fact, I think we've got another, is it the Aspen before the finishing pull? So looking ahead to tomorrow, but probably more pertinently Thursday, we obviously think that Schleck needs to go on the attack, certainly on Thursday, if not tomorrow as well.
Of course he does, because what this has done is it's brought Menchov into play, you know, because Menchov can time trial, and Schleck patently can't, unless he's, you know, he's got his Gruber assist set to stun.
Well, actually, that's a very good point. And Chris Boardman, talking on ITV today, said after the race that he was thinking about it. And we've all been tarring Andy Schleck with the he can't time trial for Toffee Brush. And he says maybe he's not as bad this year because he's a far better rider this year than he was last year. And he lost, I think, what was it, 1 minute 40 to Contador in the time trial last year.
Maybe
he's not as bad as we're saying.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, because everybody and their granny's tarring him with the same brush. But if there's one man who I've got more respect when it comes to time trialing and reading a time trial than anybody, you know, except possibly Graham O'Bree, it's Chris Boardman. I mean, he's a man who knows a time trial inside out. So it could be right, but, you know, Menchov and Contador, whether Schleck's improved or not, are still far better natural time trialists. So I think Schleck's going to have to use this and use today and his disappointment with today, because he was, you know, what is it, he crossed the line and said to one of the Astana Swaniers, bravo, mate, or words to that effect. Mm-hmm. And he's going to have to use that anger to fuel you know, to stoke the fire that will let him gain some time in the next couple of stages.
Well, he said that. He says he's very angry and he wants to take revenge. He also said, and he, in fairness to him, he wasn't specifically aiming this at just Alberto Contador. He was saying all those guys, you know, he said, I'm not on the jury, but I wouldn't be giving any of them the Fair Play Award today.
He was booed by the French, Contador, or by the sundry people at the finish when he was taking the yellow jersey.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's not just us. I mean, the crowd made their feelings patently obvious as well.
Oh, I did actually see Contador getting his yellow jersey, and I thought it was really poignant that the camera actually kept flicking back and forth between a very smiling Alberto Contador putting the jersey on and waving to the crowd. I didn't hear the boos right enough, but back to Andy Schleck, who was standing watching him. And that surprised me, because I thought he would be, you know, currently kicking a mechanic up and down the team bus at that point.
Oh no, he'll be soaking it up and using it as fuel. I think we've made our feelings perfectly clear. That's no way to take the yellow, in my opinion. Before we finish today, did you've been watching ITV,
yes,
haven't you?
I do, yes.
You'll have missed Bradley Wiggins on Eurosport then.
Yes, I have missed Bradley Wiggins. I didn't know he'd given up riding a bike and was suddenly a commentator for Eurosport, or am I missing something?
Well, no, Eurosport do this thing where they have Brailsford with the PowerPoint presentation in the bus, you know, saying blah blah, and today it's dignity and respect, and this is, you've got to ride for your dignity and respect, and psyching them up and going through the various bits of the stage. And afterwards, they had some interviews outside the bus with riders. They had Thomas Lofquist, who's above Brad now, yeah, in the GC. And they said, you know, in essence, they said, so why is Wiggins done, you know, less well this year? And Lockwood said, well, you'd have to ask him. So sure enough, they
fair
did.
Enough.
And Brad said, well, on paper, my tour's been shit. Which, it's not quite as bad as yesterday.
Well, yeah, we covered this yesterday in his interview.
But they still beeped it out. And then he said, now, prior to last year, if you'd said to the team I'd be 18th, we'd all have been masturbating on the floor.
No!
And they didn't beep that out. I mean, that's weird double standards. But, you know, Brad's back. Get tweeting, son.
Oh, you gotta love him. Absolutely gotta love him. Well, I think that's probably all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening. And, of course, thank you for listening to our 100th show. And, of course, for staying subscribed. You can contact us by visiting our website at velocast.co.uk, where you can also find out how you can donate or subscribe to the show. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a comment or review in iTunes, as this really helps with other people discovering it. Well, I hope you can join us tomorrow, once the race has finally reached the Tourmalet, for another edition of the Velocast.